The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray here in the studio, and today it's Shaka Hislop and Ali Moreno along for the ride. Also joining us, we have Gab Marcotti and Frank Leboeuf, and we're going to start the talk on Romelu Lukaku returning to Inter. Chelsea and Inter agreeing a deal for him to rejoin Inter next season. Gab, can you tell us more about what the deal entails and what that fee is after all?
So there is an agreement between the two clubs. He's scheduled for medical next week. Obviously, no announcement yet, but everybody pretty much confirming that the agreement's done. They kind of met in the middle, Kay. Chelsea wanted a loan fee of 10 million euros. Inter wanted to offer no more than 5 million euros. Eventually, it looks like the deal is done at 8 million euros. Plus up to 2 million euros in performance-related bonuses for this season. So if everything goes really well, Chelsea gets their 10 million. Obviously doesn't change the fact that, you know, this is a player whom Chelsea paid around 110 million euros for just 12 months ago. And it is just a loan deal. So in a year's time, they're going to have to figure something out. On the wages front, and I want to emphasize this because I don't know how many professionals do this. Lukaku took a big pay cut, round about 30%. In addition to that, he's going to be the beneficiary of some tax legislation. But you know, his take-home pay is still going to be around 30% less than it was at Chelsea for this one season. So obviously, he really, really wanted to go back to Milan.
Yeah, if he's losing out on a bit of money there, what about Chelsea? That's 100 million euros that doesn't look like they're going to be getting back. Is the pressure going to be on Tuchel now, Gab? Because presumably he wanted this player last season but couldn't make it work. And with new owners in, surely they'll be looking at what this all means.
Well, I mean, look, he's still a Chelsea player. He's got a five-year deal, or he signed a five-year deal. He's signed up through 2026. So after this season, you know, Chelsea will either take him back, agree another loan deal, or try to complete a permanent transfer with Inter. But I think it's going to be difficult because obviously Inter's financial situation not good. And of course, he's going to be 30 years old next summer. So they are going to take a big hit on it. Is Tuchel under pressure? I think you're going to hear a lot of different versions now about how Lukaku ended up back at Chelsea. And if I'm Todd Boehly, I'm going to have an inquest. I'm going to ask everybody there, starting with Tuchel, and say, hey, did you really want this guy? Were you the driver behind signing him? If so, what was your plan for him? Why did it not work out? How much of this is down to, you know, Lukaku deciding, oh, I made a mistake, let me go back to Milan? And how much of this is down to the environment? Were there other people, other forces? Obviously, Marina Granovskaya and Bruce Buck are on their way out at the club. But, you know, they do have, whether it's director of football Peter Cech, whether it's Scott McLaughlin, the chief international scout, you know, somebody greenlit this signing. The buck has to stop with somebody, and there's no question that Chelsea are going to take a huge hit on him. I mean, they're taking a huge hit just with, this is a player who's got about 22 million euros in amortization per season. So they're going to take a big hit on him, you know, regardless, even with that 8 plus 2 million loan fee this season. But if you're Todd Boehly, you want to figure out exactly what happened and try to apportion accountability here.
What do you think, Frank? Should Tuchel be taking some of the blame for this situation?
Not 100% of it. I would say he's responsible for picking him up, of course, choosing him. But I think Lukaku also didn't really want to come. I think Inter wanted to get rid of him because of the 113 million euros, if I say correctly. And I think everybody is a little bit guilty about that. But that's the football that we see now, where 100 million euros seems to be nothing in a world of football. It's like 100 bucks for us, and you spend it, and if it doesn't work, it's okay, you get rid of it, and it's not really a problem. We see that with so many transfer fees. We see that with so many salaries for some players who don't perform. And it's like it's not a big deal. It is a big deal when you bet on somebody for 130 million, you give 22 million pounds per month on wage. You should expect some results. And Tuchel is responsible because he picked him, but I guess the more responsible of all is Lukaku, because he didn't perform the way everybody was expecting him to do. I'm sad for him because I think he's a great guy, he's a great player, but it wasn't a good season. It was a disaster. And I don't know if him going back to Inter for a season is going to resolve the problem within a year.
Ali, you're a new owner at Chelsea. You're coming in. You're looking at what's happened the previous season. Are you going to be reluctant to give Tuchel the money that he wants to rebuild some of that squad after what's happened here?
Well, I think on paper you can make that argument. But what I would say is that Toboli would be reluctant to give any of us the money. All of us would have said, yes, what a great signing Lukaku is going to be for Chelsea. This is the player that they needed in order to have goal-scoring consistency. A player that could provide that presence inside the 18-yard box that could potentially be the difference. This was the conversation going on ahead of the season. Could potentially be the difference between Chelsea being a real contender against Manchester City and Liverpool or not. That he was going to be that guy. And we all agreed back then and said, you know what? We really think Lukaku is going to have a tremendous impact on this team. He's going to be productive. He's going to score goals. And it didn't happen. And so all of us were wrong. Not only Thomas Tuchel. All of us were wrong. And I think at some point, and this is where I wholeheartedly agree with Frank, while we like to focus on the sporting director, we like to focus on the manager, we like to focus on all the things in and around the organization that brought Lukaku in, I think at some point we have to focus on the guy who's actually on the field, and that is Romelu Lukaku. Lukaku. Lukaku! Yes, Lukaku. We have to focus on him and say, you know what? He did not adapt to the idea that he didn't have a manager that put an arm around his shoulder and said, Romelu, you're my guy. You're my guy, and you will forever be my guy. I love you. I trust you. You're going to be out there regardless because you're so critically important for us. No, you had a manager who said, well, if you're not scoring goals, you're going to sit on the bench. And if you're not going to do the work, you're going to sit on the bench. Lukaku didn't like that, didn't respond to it, and in the end, Chelsea found another way to score goals, and that's why Lukaku was going back to Inter.
Do you agree with that, Shaka?
I do. I think Gab is absolutely right. First step is to have an inquest and ask the questions as to who sanctioned this and try to figure out exactly why it went as wrong as it did. Just looking from the outside, I don't put much of that blame on Thomas Tuchel. I think as much as I was very critical of Thomas Tuchel and how he handled the fallout around that interview that Romelu Lukaku did, I think he could have handled better, Thomas Tuchel. The purchase of Romelu Lukaku for just about everybody in the game seemed like a good one. I'm sure there were some dissenting voices, but those were in a very small minority. So you have to ask, why did it then go as wrong as it did? Things started well. It seemed Chelsea had all the pieces in place to service Lukaku in a way that would see him score the kind of goals that he did in Italy. But then the injury came and nothing just seemed to click. So while you have that inquest, I think you then have to focus around that injury, his comeback. But ultimately, I think a lot of that responsibility falls to the player himself. Because I just don't think he lived up to his own expectation.
Just to go back to what you were saying as well, Gab, with Granovskaya and Buck out, we're also seeing, maybe it was just some of the wording in some of the reports, but it got brought up yesterday that it was Todd Boehly making Raheem Sterling a transfer target. Now, we'll get to Sterling in just a moment, but it's the fact that it said Todd Boehly. Is he wanting to have a part and a say in who comes in?
I mean, look, ultimately, he leads the consortium that owns the club. I don't imagine Todd Boehly, you know, makes technical decisions with the LA Dodgers. I don't see why he would suddenly start making them here. So it could just be something that, oh, I've heard of Raheem Sterling. Yeah, great player. Let's see if it's doable. I don't think we need to, you know, until we have more information, we can't say like, oh, look, Todd Bowley's making the football decisions. I don't think that's accurate. But I do think, though, he's going to now need to appoint somebody to replace Marina Granovskaya. It was absolutely essential. And I think he has to make a decision on the people who took Lukaku to the club, because, yeah, a lot of people thought it was a good move if you were going to take your record signing and put him in conditions to be effective, to be the most effective player he can be. And yes, there were certainly injuries. There was a system that clearly didn't suit him with no wingers and playing up front on his own when he had produced so well in a front two. And then you need to ask, why was that decision taken? How much were the injuries part of the problem? And how much of it was down to Lukaku? Personally, these are all answers that Todd Boehly wants. And frankly, I'm glad that there is an owner who seems to be taking an interest and wants answers here, because so often we have faraway owners who, you know, put their trust in the football folk, who are people who don't have skin in the game because it's not their money, and they go and they make decisions with somebody else's money, and they make bad decisions, and they seem to stick around forever. So if this was a bad decision, and by all accounts it was, let's figure out what went wrong.
And let's talk about some decisions as well, Gab, because that's a busy summer ahead of them. Who replaces Lukaku? Who are they looking at to bring in?
That's the million-dollar question, because, you know, obviously... Sure, you can say Kai Havertz is the first choice center forward. You still need somebody to back him up. Chelsea really like Armando Broja, who obviously was on loan at Southampton last year. He's also somebody that they can monetize because he's got offers from other clubs as well. But this is still a very young player who's, you know, only started a handful of games in the Premier League. Is that enough as a backup? I don't know. Could you be looking at, you know, you have so many attacking players. Could you be looking at some sort of, you know, Manchester City type strikerless system where they all kind of move around? Could you go back to Werner through the middle? Could you try Pulisic in that role? Maybe. You know, there are a lot of options there. I do not believe, or certainly I think it would be unwise of Chelsea to go out and, you know, spend another 70, 80 million on some sort of top drawer center forward until you've sorted out your defense, where, you know, you've already lost two free agents and you could well lose Azpilicueta as well. You need people back there, midfield as well, where, you know, obviously you're a player down and Conte and Jorginho aren't getting any younger. You know, it seems that there's a whole bunch of other areas which are also priorities, and then probably also shifting some players out, get some money back, and then you can reinvest in the team. One other point in all this, which I think has been missed, is Todd Boehly, it's emerged, the Times reporting that, you know, he withheld something like £100 million out of the agreed £2.5 billion sale price. And reportedly, this was in case there are unforeseen penalties for violating financial fair plays, whether UEFA's or the Premier League's. Now it all makes a lot of sense because they're taking a big hit on Lukaku. And I don't see how you know, they won't be at risk of balancing the books unless they manage to shift some players and do so for a considerable price.
And if they can do that, is Robert Lewandowski, Gab, a player that they could be looking at to bring in?
Again, you know, Robert Lewandowski is the kind of player you bring in if you want to win here and now. We know all about all the difficulties Barcelona are going to have to sign him. And also you've got a very stubborn Bayern as well, who are saying, no, you're going to see out your contract. So I don't think that's going to be an easy deal to make. I think it's going to be very expensive in terms of wages. If Chelsea want to do that and try to win straight away, sure. But then, you know, you're going to have Lukaku. You've got the real risk of Lukaku coming back and being on the books on Lewandowski-type money for the next 3 years, And then you've just spent, you know, 15, 20, 25 million on a guy on a center forward who's turning 33. If on top of that, you need to balance your books and bring in players in other positions, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you all makes how it all makes sense. You know, again, unless you're going to find people to give you 80, 100 million for Ziyech or Pulisic or guys like that, or Hudson-Odoi or whatever.
Who would you like to see come in, Frank, to replace Romelu Lukaku?
No one. I think that's not the priority of Chelsea. I think if you want to do the front pages, you can talk about Lewandowski, you can talk about Sterling and some other Class A players. But as Gab said, you know, you have to look elsewhere in the positioning. You need central defenders. I want to talk about Koundé. I want to talk about a right back. I want to talk maybe somebody in the midfield zone, in the middle of the park, you know, according to Kanté fitness last year, how Jorginho is going to handle the season as well. It's where they have to look for. They've been seeking for the best top scorer for 2 years. It never worked. They have talented players that they have to settle in, that they have to put and give confidence to. But I think it's not a priority for Chelsea to find a striker, like it wasn't a priority for Real Madrid to sign Mbappé. They signed Rudiger. That was clever. That's a clever signing. I want to see Chelsea having clever signings as well and stop, you know, focusing on getting in the front page because of signing a striker, which is not clearly a priority because they have the players there that they signed last year and 2 years ago.
I think Mbappe might well have been a priority, though, Frank, at Real Madrid, but didn't work out for them in the end. With what Frank's saying there, would you agree that it's not a priority to look at replacing Lukaku at Chelsea right now?
No, there are more positions that need more urgent attention. But it's not my money. So I'll plump for Lewandowski all day long. I'm all right with it. Listen, I understand exactly what Gab is saying. And to that point, Chelsea are a very different football club under very different ownership that we will see how that pans out than they were 12 months ago under Abramovich, when you knew what he was going to spend, you knew how he was going to run that football club. It's a very different place now. So we really need to see who Chelsea are and who they show themselves to be. But if you're talking strikers, particularly strikers who are available, you want to come in and do a job, even if it's short term, a very good job in the short term, I don't think you look much further than Robert Lewandowski.
In this so-called inquest that Toboli is making and talking about the mistake that was Romelu Lukaku, one of the first questions that I would ask, if indeed I own this club, is, wait a minute, you mean to tell me we paid this money for this guy, and even though he had a tough season, we can't find a way to make it work, so we have to loan him out to some other team that he's still under contract, but it wasn't going to work for us? Why couldn't we make this work? If we thought that this was the guy, why can we not make it work? I know it's a tough season. What makes it so difficult to make it work in the future? If he stays healthy, if he's confident, is he not the same player that he was a year ago prior to this transfer? So instead of looking into spending money on Robert Lewandowski, why not improving what you already have in your team? Instead, that guy's walking out the door, and now you're trying to figure out answers. Good luck with that.
Yeah, let's talk about what's going on at Arsenal. Fabio Vieira coming in. I mean, Vieira is a great last name to be going to Arsenal, surely. Can you tell us more about this, Gab?
Yeah, well, he's 22 years old, 40 million euros. It's interesting because he is a versatile player. He played mostly as an attacking midfielder, has also played wide, obviously at Porto. And when I first saw this, I looked at this and I said, well, you know, you have Smith Rowe, you've got Odegaard, you've got Martinelli, you've got Pepe somewhere stashed in the back, and of course you've got Bukayo Saka. Why are you putting money into this position? Some suggestion that, you know, he could be playing deeper as well. He is left-footed. He could be the alternative to Granit Xhaka in front of the back four. And Arsenal generally think that they got themselves a very, very talented young footballer, and then maybe you can figure out those issues about where best to deploy him later on.
Sometimes you need to see or hear things to believe them, and you've got to check out the latest Football Americas. It is streaming now because Craig Burley was the special guest.
Yes,
on
he was.
This one.
Hey, I was a guest as well. I'm not as special. I'm
no.
I mean,
what?
You've been on before. You haven't said
you
the things that Craig said. Anyway, he's talking about how a Sterling move to Chelsea could affect Pulisic's position. Make sure to check that out.
Okay, thanks, Gay. I thought I was special. Not anymore.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arsene Wenger's idea to replace throw-ins for kick-ins is set to be trialled by IFAB. Wenger is now FIFA's Chief of Global Football Development, so he's looking at ways to improve the game.
And it's a made-up position, is what that is.
Well, let's see if this will go ahead full-time. He says the target to make the game more spectacular and quicker, and maybe with throw-ins you could play with your feet, but in a limit of 5 seconds, for example, things like that. 5 minutes before the end, a throw-in for you should be an advantage. But in these situations, you're facing 10 outfield players in play, whilst you only have 9. Frank Leboeuf and Gab Marcotti still with us. Frank, you love this idea, don't you?
I love this idea because, you know, this idea has been tested for the during the Tournoi International of Toulon for like 40 years, where they do that every time. And the last tournament just ended with France winning against, I'm sorry, Ali, Venezuela. In final,
it was
the under 20 years old, but it's been tested there, and I think it gave pace to the game, and it clarifies the fact that we are football players. We don't play with our hands, except for goalkeepers. So why do we do throw-ins? I agree with that. You just have to make sure that the opponent won't be close to the touchline because otherwise you can't kick the ball. So you have to do like a free kick like 10 yards away. But I think it will just justify the fact that we are football players and we play with our feet, and that you can kick long balls with your foot instead of that using your hands. So I'm 100% with Arsene Wenger. And again, it's been tested like for 40 years. And I've seen that tournament many times when I was young. And I really enjoy seeing that during football games.
Ali, do you share this enthusiasm?
I am really sad. Very sad, Kay. And I'm going to tell you why. What are we going to do with the throwing coaches?
Stevie's going to be devastated.
What's going to happen with the throwing coaches? What's going to happen with Rory DeLapp? Huh? Honestly, quite frankly, I really have not given much thought to the idea of using kick-ins. I didn't think that this was an issue in the game. I don't think it's something that needs to be looked into. I don't think that is something that's going to be very easy to actually put into practice, because in places like South America, for example, where I come from, slowing down the game, whether it's for throw-ins or kickings, it is in the blood of the ball boys that work in South America. A ball will disappear in so very quickly when you're trying to push for a goal. You can never find a ball, and that's not going to change whether you have kickings or throw-ins. And then we change the nature of the game, because once you have a kicking, I don't know, 30, 40 yards from goal, guess what's going to happen? We're just swinging balls into the box. That's what's going to happen. It's a free kick, essentially, and we're swinging balls into the box. It's no longer about build-up play. We get a free kick from here, 30 yards out, 40 yards out, we're swinging it in and hoping to get on the end of it. That changes the nature of the way the game is played.
Shaka, you were on IFAB. Did you have any part in this? Kick-ins?
It was discussed. This idea has been floated for quite some time. I wasn't in favor of it then, and probably after this most recent explanation, even less in favor of it now. Now, first of all, when you walk into IFAB and you're part of that decision-making process, they say to you, we're a conservative organization. We don't want to change the laws of the game unless we absolutely have to. If it ain't broke, we ain't trying to fix it. I don't see how this falls in an immediate radar to make the game any better. To Arsene Wenger's explanation, which, again, as much as you may like the idea, and I take Frank's word for it, that it improves the game in some context, at the very least in youth football, you cannot say that the effort is in to speed the game up. Because you can take just as much time on a free kick as you can take in a throw-in. That changes nothing in terms of time wasting. In terms of the advantage, you cannot say, well, you're taking a throw-in, so the opposing team has 10 outfield players and you only have 9. That's a disadvantage. If you're taking a free kick, the opposing team has 10 men, 10 outfield players on the park, and you have 9.
But he did say it had to be taken within 5 seconds or whatever.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. As much as I say IFAB are a conservative organisation, the referee is equipped to deal with time wasting. Referees can book and send players off for time wasting. Because they don't, or because those laws aren't enforced as stringently as maybe some in the game would like to see, doesn't mean that you reinvent the wheel. You just give the officials, or you say to them, when goalkeepers were taking too long with the ball in their hands, a law was brought in to put an end to that. I don't see why you have to change the nature of the game when the referees, with a whistle, have all that they need to speed the game up in the way that they are describing.
Gab?
I just want to stick up for Arsene Wenger for a second. I don't personally like this innovation very much. Literally, his idea is to brainstorm. You've got people, Florentino Perez, talking about how, like, younger generations, they don't watch football matches because they get too slow and boring. You have people who don't like what they do in South America with the ball boys hiding the balls. So he's saying, all right, how can we fix it? What are some of the solutions that we can come up with and evolve? So he's throwing this out there. Personally, this leaves me a little bit cold. I think the other reason where I think it might be beneficial and people would like it is that a lot of times we see teams counter-press or generally press high up the pitch. Obviously, if the guy can launch it from a throw-in, you know, rather than having to throw it in, it's a lot harder to do that, and it would open up the game. These are the arguments in favor of it. Let's find out if it's worthwhile. Let's do what they did last time. They did this in the 90s. They said, let's trial it not just at the Toulon tournament, but let's trial it at youth level. I think it was an under-17 World Cup, if I'm not mistaken. Might have been something else. They did it. They got the feedback from the coaches and the players. They said, no, we don't like it. It's not right for us. And they moved on. And let's talk about this in 30 years. Now, 30 years later, they're talking about it again. I don't think we can have this knee-jerk sort of conservative reaction where any new idea sucks. Let's go. Let's trial it if we think it's worth trialing. And let's wait and see what it would actually look like.
And Gab, you said he's throwing the idea out there. I think you mean he's kicking the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was worth the entry money all on it. So.
Frank, you get the final say on this one.
I think it just opened, it's an opportunity to open another door and to maybe have more option than a throw-in. Not necessarily like Ali explained that you will kick a long ball, but you can change side, you can open up. And it's true that when you're under the pressure, when you have a throw-in for yourself and you feel the pressure of the opponent, 9 out of 10, you're going to lose the ball in your own half because you're going to be pressurized. Where with the ball on the floor, with your feet, with your foot, you can find other destinations, I would say, with the ball. And I think it will be better. I remember the back pass. I think Xhaka have experienced the back passes before that he could take with his hands. I think Ali is to be too young maybe to have experienced that. But he's been a massive change.
I wasn't that young.
Okay, well, okay, good. So we experienced that. It was a real change. It brought something big into that game and changed the positioning and the skills of the goalkeepers. But I don't know if it will do the same with the throw-in. But I think it's an experience that has to be tested again and maybe in the top level to see if it helps the wing backs or it helps the game overall. I'm not sure about that, but I think everything to get more into the game and make the game maybe faster, it's always a good solution for me.
Why punish the pressing team? And this is an example that both Gab and Frank had mentioned. Why punish the pressing team? And why reward the team that can get out of pressure? Why give them an easy out? This is part of the game. Being able to play out of pressure is part of being a good team. Breaking those lines of pressure is part of the challenge. So why make it easier? None of us are sitting here and saying, you know, let's make it easier for the team that cannot pass through lines. That's their problem. That's not the pressing team's problem. I'm not going to give them an out. Why would I give them an out? That is something that there's no need for that. I don't think you change the nature of the game. Hold on, Gab. You don't change the nature of the game to make it easier for a team that can do the basic things on the field. So now you can kick it long? This is how you release pressure? I think it's. I don't think cutting corners helps in the long run.
I fundamentally agree with you about the pressing game. Like I said, just to be clear, I'm not in favor of this. But you have certain situations, particularly in certain leagues, where both teams just press the crap out of each other for 90 minutes. I can think of some Bundesliga teams who go and try to do this. Every goal is the result of a direct mistake. And it's very, very difficult to play because teams play with a high line. Spaces get really, really tight. And sure, if you have wonderfully technical players, you can play through it and it's pretty and you still get chances. But there is some concern and there is some data behind it from some people. And again, not that I'm agreeing with this, that suggests people are slightly turned off by this because you actually see fewer goals as a result. And this is something where you want to open it up, that certain teams have gotten too good at pressing and other teams really struggle with it.
Frank?
Just one last thing. I think the English always do perfect stuff, you know, and perfect rules and perfect laws of football. But don't you think it's a mistake from the beginning of the football game? Why do we have to do throw-ins in football for football players? We do goal kicks with the foot. We do corner kicks with the foot. Only goalkeepers have the right to play with their hands. But otherwise, why do we have to do throw-ins? And wasn't it a mistake that we can rectify and do kicks?
Let me ask this, though. I mean, a lot of the focus is on, well, it's in the 89th minute and you're one down and you want to launch it at the opposing box. What if it's 89th minute, I'm one up? What's stopping me from playing, you know, a kick-in to Ali, who's 12 inches away, and we just kill the game just like that? You know, there's two sides to this very coin that it may just prove to counter each other. Again, just going back to IFAB, say they are, as a conservative organization, if it's not broke, don't try to fix it. Throw-ins is not one. Mm-hmm. Of all the things, I've softened my stance around stopping the clock, etc. I think that deserves further investigation. But I just don't see throw-ins as being the thing that would bring the younger generation back to the game. I really don't.
You know what the real issue here is, Shaq? It's the fact that Toulon tournament, France won it, and then Frank then is all for it. That's
if,
in the end.
If,
that's
if Venezuela won it, we'd never be having this.
Absolutely not.
Football would be perfect.
Especially against Venezuela.
See, there you go. See?
Meanwhile, if you'd like to see,
guys,
if you'd like to see and hear more of Gab disagreeing with people, make sure to check out the latest.
Even
Gab
though
and
he
Jules
kind of agrees,
kind of half agrees. Yeah. Just don't get him started on Dennis Bergkamp. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Sadio Mane seen in his Bayern Munich training kit for the first time as he posed for pictures with fans, completed the first part of his medical. Just highlights the fact that with Darwin Nunez coming in at Liverpool, they're getting their business done. Same can be said for Man City, Julian Alvarez and Erling Haaland in there. Big contrast to their rivals, Manchester United, who are yet to make any signings for their new coach, Erik ten Hag, as we now welcome in Mark Ogden to talk more about this. What's the problem there, Mark?
Well, it's either a problem or it's United being cautious, diligent. I guess it depends what side of the coin. But I do think that they do need to get a deal done. The issue is that they're trying to make sure the players they get in are players that want to play for United for the right reasons, players that don't want to go just for the money. They've had that problem over the last few years with players they've signed that haven't turned out well. Maybe they're being a bit overcautious because of the mistakes they've made in the past. But look, they are in talks to sign Frenkie de Jong from Barcelona. That hasn't moved on as yet. I think United are quite wary of Barcelona. Barcelona are quite unpredictable right now in terms of the money they want, the situation they have politically selling players at the moment. I think there are the other players that United are looking at. You know, Anthony Ajax is no secret there. So United have got players that they want to sign. They haven't made the progress yet required to get them over the line. But I do think that United are being a bit more cautious than they would be in the past. And that might be a good thing at the end of the window. But right now, when, like you say, it seems like Liverpool, Man City, Bayern Munich are making signs, it looks like United are being, you know, off the pace. I don't think we can judge United properly until the end of the window.
We heard Richard Arnold saying himself, Mark, that they were scared to overpay after spending $1 billion on signings. And do you think that's something that is holding up this Frenkie de Jong deal?
I don't think it's holding up the de Jong deal as much. I think the issue with de Jong is that I think he has to be convinced that United's the right move. I think that the money's there to sign de Jong. And I think Barcelona have to sell. They know they have to sell. There's obviously a little bit of haggling between the clubs in terms of valuations, but I don't think it's deal-breaking differences. The issue with de Jong is that he has to be convinced that leaving Barcelona, who is in the Champions League next season, for Man United, who are not in the Champions League and have obviously got a period of transition to go through, I think he's persuaded it's the right move for him. But there aren't many other options for De Jong, so he might not have a choice. It might be a case of Barca have to sell and you have to go. And, you know, Man United is not a bad move, but it's not a great move right now. I think he needs more persuading.
What's the story on Christian Eriksen rejecting United then, Mark? What can you tell us?
I'm not sure it's a rejection at this stage. I think that Eriksen's keeping his options open. I think, you know, if Eriksen went to Man United, you've got to consider that Bruno Fernandes is there. You've got Cristiano Ronaldo is there. Would Eriksen play? Would Eriksen play the games he wants to play? They've got quite a congested number of options in that area of the pitch. Now, obviously, they've lost Pogba. They've lost Juan Mata, who didn't play very often last season. I think Eriksen needs to be convinced that going to United will get him the game time that he wants. I don't think that deal is over as yet. I think United are interested. But again, it's one of those situations where United have probably got a few cards on the table and the one which wants to play. But they need to start playing some soon.
But the fans want to know who they are actually going to get in. Can you give them any reassurances? Is there any word on Anthony from Ajax?
No, it's a situation as it is. I think United are probably 8/10 of the way to some players, but that 9/10 in that final bit, they're not getting done because they are, like I say, trying to cross every T and dot every I. And I think, yes, that might work out at the end of the window when they may have 3 or 4 players in. But I think right now, they are looking like they're off the pace. It is tough to judge at this stage because it is only June. And I think once players come out of contract or the contracts, you know, expire at June 30th, that's when you start seeing transfers really start to happen at the beginning of July. But yes, United are in for three or four players right now. They need to get one over the line because it looks like we're getting to the stage where we're having another summer of sagas at Man United when sometimes they just have to act swiftly and get a deal done. Even if it means paying a bit more than they want to pay. Because that actual overpaying £4, 5, 6 million would just get rid of a lot of the negativity right now. And maybe that is a good investment at this point in time.
Just to touch on it as well, Mark, what's been the fallout then from Richard Arnold's chat with the fans? What's that case there? Because surely it's putting the club in a less than favourable light. It's not what they need right now, is it?
You know, I kind of enjoyed his honesty a little bit. I do think that, you know, it takes something. It's quite bold to actually go and meet some fans at a pub when you know you're going to get a critical audience, because there's no way that Richard Arnold is going to get pats on the back from supporters for meeting them. You know, the fans that have complained all through last season about players leaking things and all of a sudden the fans speak to Richard Arnold and leak a video, it is kind of hypocritical. But I do think it's good that a club chief exec will converse with fans. Maybe it's not the right environment. Maybe a fans forum would be the better way to do it. But he did wait. You know, he didn't back off from it. He actually fronted them up and gave his viewpoints. He was quite candid. I think, you know, the honesty there was refreshing in a way. But I think Richard Arnold can't win. I think he has to sign some players, or United have to sign some players, and they have to win some games. Until that happens, he's not going to get the favourable reception from the fans that he wants. It's all about what happens on the pitch. Actions speaking louder than words. That's what always matters at Man United. You have to win games. Forget about what you say.
Well, you can keep your eye on if there are any signings coming into Manchester United by keeping up to date with our transfer page over on the website. Make sure to do that. It is Transfer Talk. And we've got extra time coming up later to stay up to date with that. You must subscribe to our YouTube page. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. An employee of Cristiano Ronaldo has crashed Ronaldo's Bugatti into a wall in Mallorca. No one was hurt. Ronaldo was not in the car at the time either. But these are the scenes from that.
It looks like my Bugatti, you know, a little bit.
Does it?
Is your Bugatti over a million as well? Does it cost over a mil?
It's a bit dented, my Bugatti.
It's yours, a Lego Bugatti?
Pretty much.
Okay. Yes.
Runs just as good as that one.
Does it?
Thanks for being with us. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Shaka Ale. We also have Frank and Mark Ogden joining us as well. I just want to mention, Shaka, yesterday the panel trusted Don Hutchison's percentages over your algorithm.
Oh, no.
And I have to say, Shaka, I did stick up for you.
Thank you very much,
reluctantly.
Kate. What do you mean reluctantly? Okay, this is just kind of symptomatic of the era we live in. In a world of alternative facts and opinion over science, there's no reason to better explain Don's percentages being favoured over the highly acclaimed algorithm.
wait.
Algorithm all the way.
I will never trust Don on anything. Mm-hmm. That includes percent.
Well, certainly. Okay, all right.
Yes, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But to talk about your algorithm as an exact science,
it's an insult to science.
Well, it's dependent on the data, which is input.
All right. Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
But it's science.
Let's get some stats here then. Mark, English clubs have only won 2 of the last 10 Champions Leagues, despite being regarded as the most competitive league. Will the next decade be better for English clubs in Europe?
Ooh. Mm.
Ooh,
I've got a good algorithm for you, Mark.
Well, what have we had for the last 3 of the last 4 years? We've had an English team in the final, so I do think that English clubs have got the money, they've got the appeal of the Premier League, but I don't think you can ever rule out Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich. So I'm not sure it's going to be a golden decade for English football. I still think they have to overcome the continent's biggest team. So for me, I still think you have to go with Bayern, Real, Barca as the big hitters, and Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, and if you're not, Man United ever get back to what they used to be as a potential competitor.
You see that Mark could not get through the answer without bringing up Manchester United somehow.
Yeah. One day.
What?
One day.
Come on.
In the hopefully not too distant future.
Yeah. Somehow we had on the back end Manchester United. There we go. Yeah. Check. We got it.
Optimistic.
Well, the thin line, Mark. Thin line and optimism.
He definitely was using your algorithm.
Yeah. Champions League is not coming home. All right. For Frank, if Chelsea fail to get Jules Koundé, who would be the best alternative for Chelsea to try and sign?
Oh, you should have asked me that question before the show. I would have thought about that. I think Koundé is a very good option. If not, I forgot the name of the French defender playing for Fofana. Fofana from Leicester is an absolute fantastic defender. That would be a fantastic option as well. And I'm not sure Leicester will let him go, but he's a great player.
I gotta tell you, I am so impressed by Frank, right? He had no name in his head. There were no options. And somehow he brought Fofana out of nowhere. Yes.
Frank won the World Cup, you know.
World class.
You know, when you know football, you know football. Everything is there.
Do you know anything, Mark?
It clicks at some point.
Anything, Mark, about who they may be looking at, Chelsea?
I think Koundé is by a long way their favourite target, but he seems to fancy Barcelona, so I think they have got a problem. They have got a list of players they need to look at. But no, I mean, I think Frank's right. There aren't many options there, but Fofana, it would be a great option. He had obviously a bad injury at Leicester last season. He came back towards the end. So I think a lot of clubs have looked at Fofana. I think Real Madrid are looking at him at one point. So he's obviously got something about him. It'd be a good signing for Chelsea.
What do you think, Shaq?
The one omission that I was waiting for Mark to mention there, I think Manchester United.
Oh!
One day. Man, look to sign Fofana. Yeah. One day.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I'm laughing at Frank as well, expecting to be prepped on the question. That's not how it works, Frank. Got an extra time.
You just make it up here, Frank.
Okay, for Shaka.
Uh-oh.
How good of a signing will Nick Pope be for Newcastle, and do you think he's a top-class keeper in the league?
I do. I think Nick Pope is an outstanding goalkeeper. But saying that, I didn't think goalkeeping was the first concern for Newcastle. I think Dubravka is a very good goalkeeper, and certainly after injury came back and finished the season really well. And as much as Newcastle may be spending, that's not the department I thought needed immediate attention.
Can you pull any French goalkeepers out of your head like that?
Bernard Lamar.
Wow, that's a long way back.
Wow.
Fabien Barthez.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow, no prep needed for Shaka.
Very. You keep going back?
No. Next question, please.
Hey, Joel Batz. You want to keep going back?
All right. Next
question, please. And you know where Bernard Lama, you know for which club Bernard Lama played when he came to England? West Ham.
Yes, I do.
Just randomly. Yeah. Shaka.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I know.
Now that Gab's dislike of Dennis Bergkamp is out in the open, who is the player... Okay. He's been absolutely, well, he outed himself. Who is the player the guys think is or was very talented, but they couldn't stand him because of their demeanor on the field? Mark's smiling there. I feel like Mark already has an answer for this one. Mark?
I'm smiling because I was hoping you were going to come to me last so I could, think of somebody. that is a tough one. Can you come back to me? Give me 30 seconds.
We'll come back to you. Who's got one?
Mario Balotelli.
You couldn't stand him.
It is very frustrating as a player who was nowhere near as talented as Mario Balotelli has been over the course of his career to see a guy that, because of his different views and how he understands and sees the game and how I think he was never able to fulfill his true potential. That's difficult to see. It's frustrating because, man, just give me that for one day and I'll make it work, Mario. I'll make it work. Give me that and I'll make it work. And for him, it was a sideshow rather than what we saw on the field with any sort of consistency.
Do the what?
I think we should. That's it.
Wow.
I think you got it, Kay. I think you win.
Okay. Well, listen, you don't have to have one if you haven't got one. Ale had one. Have you thought of anybody, Mark?
Yeah, and Frank might be upset by this, but I'm going to go for Robert Pires because when he was at Arsenal, he was a fantastic player, but that Arsenal team had a real arrogance about them, and obviously justified arrogance because they're such a great team, but I thought Pires was the kind of the epitome of the arrogance of the Arsenal team, and I don't know, there were times when I started, you know, he overdid the arrogance a little bit. I remember the penalty that he and Thierry Henry cooked up together that time at Highbury, which again wasn't very, very fair on the opposition, but I'd say Robert Pires. Nothing against the guy personally, but I thought he carried that arrogance onto the pitch a little too much at times. Frank may disagree.
Frank.
I think Robert Pires' name as the nicest guy ever in France, with all kindness necessary to be a very much a gentleman. He's a very nice guy. He's not arrogant whatsoever. But you know, it's funny that we talk about Dennis Bergkamp, because I had some issues with Dennis Bergkamp where I found and I said in newspaper that he was an absolute fantastic player, but he was a dirty one. In stamping on your feet just before asking for the ball, elbowing you on your stomach just before asking for the ball. But it was not very well received from the Gunners fans, and I understand that, but that was the reality of it. But Zinedine Zidane was exactly the same, was doing the same. But in terms of the player and your question, I think Atem Ben Arfa, who played for Newcastle, had everything in terms of football, everything to become one of the biggest stars in the world. But I was so disappointed with his career and the fact that he didn't understand all ingredients that you need to put in your daily training session to become a fantastic player. But a talented one, like Balotelli, but never reached the level I thought he would.
Do you have one, Shaka, or should I move
well,
on?
Well, no, so one, Robert Pires, who outstanding at Newcastle, but I just felt was more talented than maybe his career played out. And then the other name that comes to mind is Craig Bellamy. And this is not my experience with Craig Bellamy, but just because I never interacted with him on the field, you know, like that. But just sharing a dressing with players who played with him and played in the same teams with him, even as teammates, a lot of the guys did not like Craig Bellamy at all. So those are just the two names that jumped to mind. Did I say Robert Pires?
Yes, you did.
No, not Robert Pires. okay. Robert, you played for Newcastle.
Laurent Robert.
Robert. There's the one.
That's the one.
Confused me at all. Too many Roberts.
So hang on, everyone's going in on nice guy Robert Pires.
No, I'm blank Lauren. I'm blank Robert Pires. I'm going Laurent Robert.
Your teammate.
No, I didn't play with him.
Oh, okay.
I didn't play with him.
All right.
Just making sure that you knew your teammate's name. That's all.
I got the wrong Robert. Wrong Robert.
Okay. How would you handle it if you're
Robert Redford?
Robert Redford.
Robert Redford, maybe.
That's an indecent proposal. We're moving on. All right. For all, would you how would you handle it if your international manager tried to discourage you from making a move to a new team like Louis van Gaal has with Timber? So just to put some context to this one, there's been reports that Louis van Gaal has told young Timber, maybe Manchester United is not going to be the best place to go to get the minutes that you might need to be playing in the World Cup. Pretty much in a nutshell. So how would you feel?
Well, first of all, I would need to have clarity in my mind, in my heart and my soul, as to what my position is with the national team. If I'm a no-doubter with the national team, I would tell the manager, I appreciate your input. Manchester United, here I come. Right? That would be my conversation. If I was a borderline player with the national team, then I would take the input of the manager and then go for a different option. Simple as that.
All right, we're going to move on for the next one because it's one for Shaka.
What?
And you're being asked to put the algorithm aside here. Oh,
it's difficult.
Be realistic. What are the chances in percentage for Senegal to make it to the semi-finals of the World Cup, making this the first time an African team has ever done so?
Senegal to the semi-finals, 19%.
is that what this algorithm spit out?
Yeah. Nah, it's a little bit low. Well, that's 19. Roughly 1 in 5 now. I'm going to go a little bit lower than that. Senegal to the semi-finals, 11%. 1 in 10 chance. 1 in 9 chance. Okay. 1 in 9.
Hey, man, this is done. This is done all over again.
My percentages are exact. 11. I don't round down. I don't round down to the nearest 5.
Gab's predicted 100%. I think he's gone for Senegal to win the World Cup.
Okay, well, bad news, Senegal. Sorry about that.
I'm more realistic with my impromptu calculations.
Hang on, I'm thinking, wasn't it you?
Who did what?
Did you say Senegal are going to win the World Cup?
No, I've gone for Argentina, I have.
Oh. Now,
no, don't ask,
I said,
Ali.
I said
move on,
Kay. Okay.
Move on.
All right.
Don't ask.
Last,
leave it,
last,
Ali.
Last
move
one.
On.
You see, you could have just gone 50-50.
No.
Which is what
nope.
Don does.
Or like no. Don likes to say, right down the middle, 33 and a third. What?
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
What?
No, 11%.
All right. To Frank and Ali. I'll start with you, Frank. Start, bench, or sell?
Ooh.
R9, hang on, is that R9 Ronaldo? Yes, it is. R9 Ronaldo, Rivaldo, and Ronaldinho.
Oh, goodness me.
I know where I'm going. God.
Okay.
I know I'd go for it.
Go ahead, Frank.
R9 Ronaldo. Okay. Good luck, yeah. I will put. That's crazy. I will put Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench.
No, no, sorry.
No.
Come on.
Like, okay, so they're saying R9 Ronaldo. So
Brazilian Ronaldo.
Brazilian Ronaldo. That's R9 Ronaldo.
R9 Ronaldo.
So no comment.
Three Brazilians is a giveaway.
R9 Ronaldo, Rivaldo, or Ronaldinho. Okay,
these glasses are not working, Frank.
Okay. Okay. Rivaldo on the bench. Ronaldinho starting, and I put Ronaldo R9 coming on.
Hang on a minute.
Frank. You have to sell one, Frank.
All right.
You can't just play everybody.
And somebody coming on.
Yeah.
What?
Somebody comes
okay,
on.
I'll just start them all. All right.
Ronaldinho, bench Ronaldo, and sell Rivaldo.
I'll tell you what.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
I'm going to agree with you. I know what you're going to say about
okay.
This.
Start and playing the whole game, Ronaldo. Bench Ronaldinho and then sell Frank's glasses because they're obviously not working.
Yep, yes. Yep. You know why?
Rivaldo will
swap
be.
Them glasses for 2 eye patches.
Poor Frank.
I don't see very well, I'm sorry.
Can I tell you a quick story about yesterday, Shaka and I were participating in a golf tournament, in a charity event for UConn men's soccer. And when you register for the event, one of the things that you could opt to do was buy what they call a golden ball. And this golf ball, you're supposed to play the whole round. And if you play the ball the whole round, you don't lose it. Then you bring it back. They put it into a pot, and then they pick out your ball. And if they pick out your ball, you win a big prize. We both believed in ourselves. We both signed up for the Golden Ball Challenge. And we both lost it in the first hole.
Not just the first hole.
The first shot.
The first shot. The first hole was a par three. We lost it. First shot. In the drink.
Hey, well, we had a great time.
Are you telling us all about it?
And it's for the kids.
Yeah.
It's just a great experience.
I intended to put my ball in the water. It's for charity.
It's for the kids.
It's for charity.
We're doing it for the kids.
Charity. Well done, guys. Well, not well done, but well done for the charity.
Well, thanks.
Yes.
All right, and well done for sending your questions, and thank you so much for doing that.
We'll get some more Manchester United in somehow.
Next time, Man U. See you later.
One day.
Maybe it was a Manchester United ball. That was the problem.